Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have another amazing guest. This one's going to be a little different because she is currently in the rehearsal process to join the Royal Caribbean cruise Oasis of the Sea, cast as Grisabella. And she will be on the boat by the time this episode comes out. So welcome, Yarden Barr, and thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
I am excited because you are mid-rehearsal, which means that you're going to get to tell us exactly what you're learning about Grisabella and the story and everything in real time, which is very different than normally I have everyone who's finished their run or has done it years ago. But before we get to that, I want to start with the beginning, which is your cat's history. So when was the first time you saw it? When were you first exposed to the musical or the movie or the VHS?
I was first exposed, I think I was in sixth grade, 11 or 12, in my first ever theater class. We had a whole Andrew Lloyd Webber unit where we listened to all of Phantom and analyzed that. And then we watched the Cats original tape. I don't know if it was a tape, but that version. And I remember not necessarily understanding the nuance of everything that was going on, but I appreciated it for what it was.
Yeah. Sixth grade is a tough year to watch it because it's like you kind of get what's going on, but you don't get what's going on. And it's very, very, very sexual and over the top. And I've kind of always thought like the young kids, it's not a big deal. And the adults, it's not a big deal. But there's a confusing period where if you watch it, it is going to be a moment where it's like, wow, hold on. I kind of get what's going on here, but I don't. So you were right in that period of time for your first viewing of a VHS where you're also probably watching Phantom and the trains and all kinds of other stuff that he put together over his career.
Yeah, but I will say I don't think I got it. And I don't think I understood. At least I don't remember understanding the sexual innuendos at that time. I don't know if our teacher kind of skimmed over that maybe a little bit more, but I don't remember it clicking in my head, at least.
Yeah, I hope your teacher did, because 12 is that's a tough time to kind of explain what the ball is to a bunch of 12 and 13-year-olds or sixth graders. But that you get to kind of experience this, the VHS and all of his dance and music and part of the theater, which, you know, he's a legend in this industry. So it's got to be a section of class.
Yes. I also did, in 2017, I think, I did see the revival on Broadway.
Okay. So tell me about that experience, getting to come to New York and see a different version of what you watch, because it's two different choreographers.
Yeah. It was an exciting time just in general, that whole trip, because I was kind of in the midst of college auditions and like visiting colleges. So I was there to visit a college campus. And then we saw a couple of shows. I didn't choose Cats. I think my mom maybe chose it. I don't really fully remember who picked it. I think it was just a ticket price kind of thing, or maybe my mom recognized the name and said, oh yeah, sure, let's do that. I do remember being surprised with the cats in the aisles. That was... you couldn't really see that. At least I don't remember seeing that in the VHS version. And they were definitely right there. But I just remember it being a whole lot of fun. I did get a photo on the stage. I think I was too shy to get a photo with Old Deuteronomy, but I have a photo in front of the oven.
Wow. And so what, you got to go on during intermission?
Yes. Yeah.
That is awesome.
I think it was during the Broadway Cares time of the year. And I have a photo with Skimbleshanks from after the show.
Hey. So you, with the like red bucket, so you got, they're like collecting the bucket. So you got to take a photo with Skimbleshanks. I wonder which Skimbleshanks you got to take a picture with. That's probably one I've talked to almost all of them, I think, from that cast.
Oh, wow.
So you went on stage where you didn't take, you're a senior or so, and you were intimidated by Old Deuteronomy to take the picture?
I was shy, or at least I definitely was at that time.
Wow. Okay. That's super fun. I did not get to go up there, and I didn't know that was a part of it when I first saw it. And I kept thinking, wow, this is so cool. But then I also really felt for the performer, thinking this cat danced a bunch and now has to sit here. And it was mostly kids that went up, but it was a chance to go and be on stage. But I was not lucky enough to grace the stage at that time.
Maybe next time it comes to Broadway.
Next time. So I want to fast forward now to you booking the cruise and the show. So walk me through kind of how that all happened and what your kind of thought was when it was like, wait a second, I have an opportunity to go do this show that I learned in the sixth grade that I got to know. I got to see this classic, but also a slightly different version because you're doing it on cruise, which is a 90-minute condensed version.
I mean, I won't lie. I've auditioned for, I think, almost every single musical that Royal Caribbean puts on. And in my mind, I thought Cats was the least likely one I was going to book. Because I'm not a dancer. Like, some of my castmates are dancers. Mm-hmm. I have never seen anything like it. And I'm, you know, more of a singer, but I'm also young. And I'm 24 right now. But I turned 25 in like 4 days. So okay. I don't know.
So you'd be 25 when this comes out.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I submitted for Grisabella just kind of like, I want to work for this company. I don't think this is the role for me, but I was really desperate to cruise. That was something I was very, very interested in. And I wanted to just get in front of them as much as possible. And I figure, okay, well, if they think I'm not right for it, then they won't call me in. And that's that. And they did call me in and they kept calling me in. It was one of the most intense audition processes I've ever been a part of. Mm-hmm. There just was round after round after round. After one of my first rounds, I was like, oh, I think they like me. I'm surprised, but happy about it. And yeah, by the end, I really wanted it. And I believed I could do it. And I figured, okay, you know, if they don't want a 40-year-old, then that's great. And I, you know, saw videos of it and I realized, okay, they are casting, you know, some younger people in this role sometimes. And yeah, just followed it through. And was really, really happy when I did end up getting it.
Yeah. It's so cool to hear that because I do think as someone who has, you know, this show's been around for 40 plus years and I've made a lot of my argument against Grisabella because I saw younger Grisabellas. I didn't see older Grisabellas that kind of had that mindset. And that's, I think, is part of why I've always argued against Grisabella as a jokeful choice. Mm-hmm. And so, but there's been a lot more of that it's more common now to have a younger Grisabella in the show. And so I want to ask though, as you're going through now, you're in the rehearsal process, how much dancing are you going to be required to do? Because Grisabella in some cases does the opening number and some of the other stuff. Like it's not just a singing role as it used to be, or at least it's evolved more to not just be come out and you're, I think they used to be 14 minutes on stage total. It's like come out, sing your one pretty song, the little memory, do your intermission, come out, do the end, and then go home. Like it was a pretty easy track minus not easy. None of them are easy, but it was a not a lot of time on stage track compared to the Cats is known for ensemble dancers dancing 2.5 hours straight. So how much are they putting you as more of a singer on stage to dance?
I think I've just, it's kept the consistent track of, I do the Baby Grizz, the opening, and dance in that. I leave after Naming of Cats to change, to do the quick change into older Grizz. There's like a little dancey movement moment in Grizabella the Glamour Cat song and a little bit of dancing off to the side in the ball where she just wants to be part of it so badly. But yeah, I think it's standard. And I am a strong mover, I would say, or a mediocre dancer, depending. I straddle that line, I could say.
Yeah, I love it. You're the mover, not a dancer, is always fun, where it's like you have to be good enough like to, as a dancer, to do that. Like, this isn't a, like, I couldn't do it. I'm not even a mover. And so there's that like line of where you still have to have the ability, even though you're more of a singer than a dancer. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back for more of The Wrong Cat Died. So I want to talk a little bit about now you're mid rehearsal and you're doing again this shortened version. So there's no Bustopher, and I think they cut a couple things out, but what have they told you? Like, I want to hear a little bit about what do you remember? Cause it's been only a couple weeks of what they've told you about character development and plot. Like, did they sit you down and said, here's Cats, here's the story, and here's Grizabella, and here's her story, and here's the relationships you need to play? Like, how much of that have you gotten into midway through this rehearsal process?
A lot, actually. We started with that. Not our whole first day, but a good chunk of our first day was us sitting in a circle, and our director gave us all printed out T.S. Eliot poems about the ones that pertain to each cat. And, well, for me, it was the Rhapsody on a, I don't remember the name of the poem, which is maybe bad, but the one that inspired Grizabella the Glamour Cat.
Yeah, because it wasn't in the book. Yeah. It wasn't in the book, so it was a separate one. And my favorite it wasn't in the book because it was too scary for children, was his rationale, which is why I'm always like, this is the one we're going to center the musical around that children go to.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's memory that is, there's like two poems that Grizabella was kind of based off of. And one is a completely separate one that is published by T.S. Eliot. And if I remember the name, it was Rhapsody on a Something Night or something like that. Or not Rhapsody. I don't know.
We can find it. It's okay.
I should probably know that.
It's okay. So you sit in a circle and you're getting told the story. What do you remember of that story? What did they tell you that stuck with you?
Oh, so much. I think that took a couple hours. Our director is so passionate. And he knew the words to all these poems by heart. He would just like say them. It was amazing. He went through every single moment of the show to the specificity of, the cats are scared by Macavity. So Old Deuteronomy, to make them feel better, brings forward Skimbleshanks. And as a candidate for the Heaviside Layer selection, to cheer up and reassure the tribe. It was like moments as specific as that. And like why each scene flowed into the others. And we each read our own characters' poems. And then at the end, I remember the director said, so don't let anyone tell you that Cats doesn't have a plot.
I mean, completely. I think that's the part that's crazy, as I've done 150 plus episodes of this. There is not a plot in the sense that most of the audience is not going to pick up the entire story being told. But the more you dig into it, there is a lot happening and there's a lot more that's unwritten that you could make assumptions about, which is again, why I've been able to continue this show is because I'm able to kind of continue with those assumptions. And I think that's where I've been always fascinated. And I was so excited to talk to you because it's not like your memory of it. It's not like you have to think back 30 years, like some people I talk to. You are right in the middle of it right now. And so it's so fresh in your mind. And I get a different version every time I talk to somebody. And so I would love to hear a little bit about what relationships they told you, your director told you, that are truth with Grizabella. Like, this is her relationship to Bomb and Demeter, or this is her relationship to Victoria, mm-hmm. or any of the other ones that you have that you can remember.
Yeah, we were definitely told what is specifically known about the character, and then the rest we kind of take on ourselves and figure out what is true for us. So what is known about Grizabella is that her and Jenny Anydots and Jelly Lorm and Skimbleshanks are around the same age. They grew up together. And her, Grizabella, and Jenny Anydots, they were besties. They were inseparable, is what I was told is a known. Also, that her relationship with Bomb and Demeter is that they all went through the same thing. Grizabella went off with McCavity, was seduced by McCavity into this other life, and then got too far into it with the drinking and the drugs. And when she wanted to rejoin the tribe, it was too late. She had already made this choice. And whereas Bomb and Demeter, first of all, I don't know if either of them necessarily chose to go with McCavity in the first place, or if they were coerced into going away with McCavity, but they both returned to the tribe willingly and didn't leave the tribe willingly, whereas Grizabella did leave willingly. So while she looks for sympathy with them, they don't give that to her. Even though in Grizabella's mind, they kind of went through the same thing. Victoria, to me, that's kind of, there's nothing known. The more known is that Syllabub is kind of what Grizabella used to be. Grizabella sees herself in Syllabub, and there's even a moment in the opening where I'm on stage as Baby Grizz and Syllabub is on stage and we're in the same pose. Again, like you said, no one's going to necessarily notice that. But it's just meant to be kind of reflective of their mirrored situations in different parts of life.
Yeah, I love that, because that's such an interesting... The Syllabub piece is kind of well-documented. And so having those little pieces that you're doing the same pose and you're together... Like, that's the stuff that allows these connections to work. And that's where I do think when you know, like your director said, that's the plot that's there. That's just not clearly defined for everybody. So there's nothing told for Victoria. There's a camp that thinks that she might be your daughter.
I think that's possible. I've heard, I'm not 100% sure where I stand on that quite yet. I'm more solid on the fact that I think Monka Strap and potentially Tugger are Grizabella's children. Monka Strap, at least because of just how similar their coloring is, I feel like that's got to be on purpose. And just his, I don't know, natural inclination towards leadership and desire to be in that kind of public facing position. And Tugger as well, to a degree. Victoria, I don't know, because I'm not sure about the ages, if that would work or who her father would be. But I've definitely heard the theory of she left Victoria with the tribe because she knew she couldn't take care of her. I guess it could be. I'm not sure. I think it's maybe more likely she's like a grandchild, perhaps.
So I think a lot of the rumor stems from her being the first one to reach out and touch you and during memory, is like there is that relationship of that's the, you know, the acceptance is usually Syllabub, I believe, or not Syllabub, it's usually Victoria, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah. Is that right? So there's this like thought that maybe it is daughter. Granddaughter is interesting because I had not thought about the different age potentials, which means that maybe it's Monk's child. Like, I don't know. That's a whole different layer that we haven't talked about.
She could be Monk's child. I could see that. I've also heard maybe Syllabub is Grizabella's granddaughter, and that's why Syllabub is so drawn to her also. But my cast is still, that's the exciting thing, is we're still kind of working things out with familial relationships, and it's kind of changing every day. And that's really fun. And who knows, maybe it'll change every day when we're on the ship too. Maybe someday, sometimes she'll be my daughter and sometimes she won't.
I think that's the best part about this show, and probably as a performer, it's got to be one of the most exciting and interesting things, is you can do some of those things and the audience might not know, or a few people will catch on, but it doesn't materially change the show and the plot. And that, I think, is really cool because it gives you this opportunity to do a slightly different thing every night versus, I guess it's not 8 shows a week. I think you do 3, 4. But it's, mm-hmm. it gives you that ability to flex and have some like nuances and try something different without like your choreographers and directors getting mad at you for completely changing the show. So it is, I actually went to the last tour and I gave them different things to try that night. And I was like, all right, could you be a boy band? Could you do this? Could you have relationships here? Could you be attracted to this one? And they said it was a blast because it took the mundane monotony out of having like the same show and the same show. I mean, they're doing it hundreds of times and freshening it just a little bit. So I can give you some ideas if you need them, but you haven't even done the full first one yet. Before yeah, needing these, I mean, extra I do ones. Love,
yeah, I love stuff like that, though, just throwing some new things in there. You can find some really, I don't know, some new nuggets every time if you kind of try to think of different things. I will say, I think that a couple of castmates and I have thought of a familial relationship for Grisabella that I haven't heard theorized before, or maybe they did and they passed that, but I haven't heard it before. And that is potentially Grisabella maybe is, I don't know if age-wise this works, but maybe she's Gus's daughter. And when she left, that's when Jelly Lorem started taking care of him. And that's where Grisabella got her desire to be a star from. I don't know. Depends on ages. But also, I think cats can have kittens at like 1 year old. So who knows?
I've tried to figure out the family tree and have failed miserably. And I know other people I've had people email me their attempts and it's just really hard. And I think that's the point because they're cats. But I've not heard that. I'm trying to think back if I've heard Grizz being Gus's daughter. It does line up with the, that's why she wanted to be a star. It also does explain Jelly's hatred towards Grisabella. Yeah. I had always had a different theory, which I know I made up, so I know it didn't come from any lore or any like real thing, and it wouldn't work on your cast because you don't have a Bustifer. But I knew that Bustifer and Grisabella were friends growing up. That is supposed to be a fact, and so were Grizz and Jelly Lorem, although this would make them maybe sisters potentially or some relationship. And I kind of thought that maybe Bustifer paid McCavity to be part of the crime gang, and that love triangle got messy between Jelly, Grizz, and Bustifer. So that was how I always thought that's where that hate came from, is it was a love triangle that got really messy and got really bad when she left. And so, and I know that I made that up. There's no like documentation on that. No one's ever said that besides me on this podcast. But I do like the theory that Gus and Grizz, so Grizz is Gus's daughter. And when she left to be a star, to follow in her dad's footsteps, Jelly has to take over, and that's why Jelly's mad that she has to take care of, you know, their pops when Grisabella was doing it or helping.
Yeah. A lot of resentment there.
That is a fun one. That would ruin a lot of people's theory that Gus should be the Jellicle choice because he might not want to go over his daughter.
Oh. I never thought about that, actually. I never thought about that aspect. I always just kind of thought, well, I guess we'll probably talk about it closer to the end, but I think Gus is tired. But I don't know.
And that, again, also works because if he's tired because his daughter left to go do, you know, had a troubled past after trying to follow him, it's like he was successful. He had all this, you know, career and life in the spotlight. Daughter tries to do it and kind of fails and has a really bad life leading up to it. He's probably tired trying to bring her back over and over and over again. This brings a whole new dimension to this that I had not thought of.
It's fun to think of new new ways that somehow end up working. All the theories somehow make sense, not necessarily together, but somehow you can make them all make sense.
That is, there are, yeah, that's exactly right. Some of them contradict each other, but there's so many ways you can do it. And that's the point, is because there's not a book. There's not a written down Jelly and Grizz are sisters, or that there's this or that. It's just a little bit of the lore of this director told this person, or these two people were roommates on the ship, and so they became friends, really good friends. And that's why they look like they're really good friends on stage, but their character shouldn't be friends. And that's how I think a lot of this takes shape, is because of seeing those different relationships. Because at the end of the day, you all are humans acting, performing as cats, doing something that's been around for 45 years or so at this point.
Yeah. It's an experience unlike any other, I will say.
Yeah. So
even so
what
far.
Are you, exactly. What are you most excited for going on the boat and getting ready to start doing the show on a cruise ship?
Oh, I'm just excited to get to... It's so fun that, first of all, my cast is so wonderful and lovely and kind and amazingly talented. And I can't wait to just be on stage with them in our full cat suit and just interact as cats and become a tribe even more than we're already becoming. I think that's... And traveling the world also, but...
Yeah. And are you ready? I mean, one thing I found fascinating about the cruise version is there's just a lot of variables that don't exist in a stage with, you've got seasickness and a rocking boat potentially, and you've got a crowd that's not a paid crowd per se. So you've got a very different crowd each week and each night even. So how do you mentally prepare, or how is your cast preparing for some of those unforeseen nuances that are part of live theater, but even more part of live theater on a cruise ship?
Yeah. I mean, I've read a lot of the cats reviews, and I know that a lot of people do tend to leave. That's just something I think we have to be ready for. It's just not for everyone, and that's okay. But when it comes to like the rocking of the ship or anything like that, I feel like that's just going to have to be something we get used to on board, or bring a lot of non-drowsy Dramamine and hope for the best. We did get, for the other show, and I think potentially for Cats as well, depending on the track, we have two different sets of shoes if we wear heels. So we can wear flats if it's an extremely rocky night, apparently.
You have better grip for your paws if you have a wild night. Those are little things I think are just to me fascinating. It's like, I didn't know about a rake stage for, until the show, and learning about that and learning about trying to do that with, potentially waves and is just such a different piece of live theater that you have to deal with.
For sure.
All right, so let's do a little rapid fire. I'm going to take Grizabella out of the equation, but if you could go on for one night for one cat, it doesn't matter if you could dance, sing, male, female, any cat, who would you want to go on for one night as?
I feel like it's got to be Tugger.
Just go wreak havoc and have fun.
Yeah, he's so fun.
So here, I have a follow-up on that, because is that your natural personality, like of that, like very outgoing, or is that the exact opposite of your personality?
That's the opposite of my personality. I mean, it depends on the day. I'm some situations, sure. But on a day-to-day basis, I wouldn't say I am as much the life of the party as he is, but he is quite an extreme. I just think it'd be so fun to be literally chaos in that track.
I agree. I ask because that's always been an answer for me, and it's the exact opposite of my personality, and which is why I think it would be fun. Because I think you only answer that question, I think, one of two ways. Either it's the exact opposite of your personality, or this is you to a T in cat form, and you want to go do it if you're not already doing it. And so it's always fun to kind of hear. It seems to be common. Everyone's like, I want to do the one that's so far out of my norm that it would be fun. And that's Tugger for a lot of people. So it's really
fun.
That
makes sense.
Who are your favorite and least favorite characters?
Okay. For favorites, I think Skimble is my favorite. And I don't know if that stemmed from seeing the revival and just getting a picture with him. But even before I got the picture, I was like, I liked that train song. That was fun. I also have a soft spot for Corkapat and Tantomile. I just think I love watching them. And it's just, it takes a lot of, I don't know, a lot of skill to truly be able to move as seamlessly together as they have to. It's enchanting to watch.
I agree.
Least favorite, that's hard because what if my castmates see this? And I know
so
it's
I always
not about
say
the
take
actor.
The people, take the people out of it. Which character would bug you? It's like which family member drives you crazy? One is definitely gives you much harder time than the other.
Ooh, I mean, for someone who would actually drive me crazy in real life, Tugger would actually drive me crazy. Yeah. Just funny because I just said I wanted to go on for him, but like as a person, yeah, he'd probably annoy me.
Okay, what about favorite song from the show?
Ooh, I mean to watch the ball. It's not really a song that we
no, it's,
sing.
I think it's a song, yeah.
Yeah, I think the ball, also, yeah, the beginning of the ball, they do sing, and it's just, it's beautiful. I just love the ball, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, my fun one is, which cat do you think would be living their best life as a cruiser on your ship, so as a guest?
Ooh. You know, I think Jenny Any Dots needs that. I think she needs a vacation. And I think she would nap on the beach all day and not train her mice and roaches and have a grand old time.
I love it. I wasn't thinking who needed it. I was thinking who would have the most fun. And so, and I also think the one that would just be on most is Bussifer, which is probably why he's not in the show, because he's busy eating and like roaming his way around in his suite because he's rich. So I
yeah,
do
he's
think
a passenger.
Would be, yeah, he's just there watching. Okay. All right. Here's the $1 million question. It's always fun to ask a Grizabella, especially somebody who is in the process of being told all the reasons why you are the Jellicle choice. I want to know, do you think a Grizabella should be the Jellicle choice? And if so, why? And if not, who would you pick as your Jellicle choice?
I do think Grizabella should be the Jellicle choice. I do feel like I am paid to say that though.
Yeah.
But I would think that anyway, at least playing the part, because well honestly, I have a kind of different take that I haven't heard before. But I think Grizabella's not necessarily aiming to be the Jellicle choice. Yeah. I think I'm just trying to go and get my family back. And this is the one night that they're all together. This is my chance to redeem myself. I don't think I necessarily enter with the thought of I'm going to like snag that Jellicle choice. I'm going to be reborn. I just want my family back. Even if I died right after, I don't think that Grizabella would care. I think she just wants to be accepted again. And I think it's Deuteronomy's kindness that says, you messed up this time. So like you deserve another chance to do better.
I don't disagree with that. I've been on this same take for a long time, but I don't understand why you can't spend the year with them and be next year's. Like, do you not have a year left? You just said you're 25. Like, I think you got the year left, right?
I think Grizabella doesn't. I don't know if it's the drugs or just she is not in very good health. And I have been directed after Big Memory that before Victoria touches her, when no one touches her, to turn away and leave to go die. Because I don't want anyone watching me. I can't have them watching me, and I'm going to go die right now. So yeah, I don't think she has another year, even if accepted. I think that the confession took everything from her.
Okay.
But I think she would have been happy even if she wasn't the Jellicle choice.
Because she gets to go home. I think that's the part that's,
yeah.
That I don't have any argument against the redemption story of being accepted to the family and wanting that back and being accepted. I just have always thought that there's a moment when they reaccept her. Why can't she spend one more year and go next year and have this like amazing time with her family, rehab, get clean and spend time with your granddaughter and your father and whoever else we've decided to believe the relationships come from, and go next year and send somebody else up this year, or even send your dad up this year, who seems like he's also on his last leg.
Yeah. Yeah, I think at least the way I have been directed, I don't think she has another year. I don't think she has another day. I think regardless, she would have died that night. Like whether she went up to the Heaviside layer or not. And I think the only reason that she was picked over Gus in my mind is that Gus lived a very fulfilling life and he doesn't necessarily need another go. Like, he did good. Grisabella needs to come back again and like fix what she did, and be a good member of the tribe, be a contributing member of the tribe. Whereas Gus already fulfilled that.
So she's coming back to then. She's going to be baby Grizz and have a full new time to be part of the family and redo her life without all the problems this time.
Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah.
It's hard. As we're talking, you're a couple weeks away from going on. So I did not expect you to give me a different answer, because your entire mindset every night is going into why you should be the choice. So I thought it'd be very difficult to argue against it, but it's really still fun to ask. Has your cast talked at all about this?
Briefly, I mentioned it to our Gus the other day that I was going on this podcast, and I was like, yeah, part of the premise is like Gus should be the choice. That's what they strongly believe over there. And he was like, yeah, obviously Gus should be the choice. I think either one is right. I don't think that one is wrong necessarily. I understand the reasoning. Yeah. But I think either way, both of them die like that day, probably.
Okay. Yeah. So they both are. Yeah. That's the argument against Gus. They're not
hanging
making
by
it.
A thread.
Yeah. Yeah. I can tell you the show actually started. Gus is the most common non-Grisabella answer. And I think makes the most logical sense. But this show started on the premise that I want an American Idol X Factor version where I want audience voting based on who performed the strongest that night. And I want it to be different every night. And I think you could do that on the cruise ship. You all could easily make that happen. And I'm waiting for some regional production or your cruise or somebody to finally say it's time. It's time to do a different version, and not really different version, just different ending every night. And I'm ready. I'm ready for whoever I can convince to finally let me do that.
I've seen and heard of a couple shows, not Cats, but, you know, the audience chooses the ending, or it's a different ending every time, just kind of randomly selected. And that could be interesting.
It works. It definitely works, because you still have everything else and you can do exactly this. You can sing Memory. You can go walk off to die. You could still get touched to be, you know, by Victoria. And then you just pause there and she's accepted into the family. And then now we vote for who gets to go up to the Heaviside layer. So the whole story stays the exact same. The only nuance I think that I have to solve with this is there's the addressing of Cats at the end. And I think Old Deuteronomy says it, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Somebody sings that. And so if Old Deuteronomy sing it wins, is voted, then we have to have a backup plan for who's going to sing that song.
Oh, Mock,
which is, again,
definitely
easy.
Knows it.
Yeah. Easy to sing. It's not hard, but we just
need
ready
to take over.
That's the variation. So that's my goal. That's what we're here for. And I've still not been able to go see it on the Oasis of the Seas. One day I hope I will be able to fulfill that and hop on the cruise and go. I think you're going international at some point, though, right? It's the boat is going international, so
we're going to Europe.
Yeah, even more fun than just the Caribbean, and get to see new parts of the world.
Yeah, I can't wait. I will say, I think the only hole in the American Idol Cats version plan is that Grisabella was not even a character when Cats was first conceived. And the reason she was added was to give more of a through line and to give the audience someone to root for. And I think it would be somewhat unsatisfying just the way the show is structured if the person that you're enticed to root for then doesn't have that validation of winning. So something would have to be tweaked, I think.
Let me tell you why I disagree with that. I don't fully disagree with it, but I partially disagree with it because having watched years of those shows, X Factor, America's Got Talent, American Idol, you pick any of them. They do an amazing job of having at least one or two sob stories. And they like really build up the 3-minute video clip you watch before they perform. And there is someone that they are pushing you to root for, but that person does not always win. And so I think that that is part of the essence of that show is that you have, because you could do the same thing for a lot of the other ones. You could put the most amazing video packages of Jenny Anydots and what she's gone through as a mom, working and sleeping and teaching all these kids and the underprivileged cockroaches and mice and whatever. You could make the 3-minute cut video package that would be incredible and make her the choice. And you would be able to do that for half of the cats. Imagine Gus's, you know, this guy who hasn't had it. So I think you still have that. Like the premise of that show does also really lead to that last person being usually the most heartfelt story and what they believe is probably one of the most show-stopping numbers, which would be memory. So I think it works still with that show premise, just the way that show is naturally built because of the way they cut those little mini packages in between.
Could be. You know, if it happens, I will happily go see it and support it. I think it'd be fun for sure. I'd be curious to see how
you can be our Grizabella.
I'm honored.
You just be ready. You might not go up every night. You might have to sing the addressing of cats and go hang out and walk off stage because somebody else goes up that night because they invited their entire family.
I'm sure by the end of this run of cats, I will know the addressing of cats. So I'll be ready.
Yeah. Okay. This has been super fun. I will link for anybody that wants to go on the Oasis so that sees how to get to that. But how can people stay in touch with you on social media?
I have an Instagram at Yarden Bar, just my name. That's probably the best way. Yeah.
Awesome. We'll link it all. Thank you so much. This has been so fun to have you. I can't wait for you to actually go and get to perform and do this on the cruise ship and have a blast being Grizabella.
Me too. Can't wait. This has been fun.
Well, thank you. And thanks everyone else for listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Threads at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
Have you ever wondered how your favorite performer actually feels? Well, here's your chance. Welcome to The Quiet Part Out Loud with me, Bobby Steggert, Broadway actor, and now a therapist to a whole host of Broadway creatives. Part interview, part therapy, this is not your typical podcast. We'll go right to the heart of things with some of your favorite artists, what they still struggle with, what lessons they've learned, what they haven't figured out yet. There's enormous power in saying the quiet part out loud. Are you listening?
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.